everyone. We are back for another episode of the Hauenstein Center's podcast series, Off the Stage. My name is Maddie Miller. I am the media specialist for the Hauenstein Center. And today I am interviewing Cal Thomas, who is a syndicated columnist and author. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Maddie. My pleasure.
And tell me, where are you traveling here from today?
Came from Miami, Florida. I've been down there about 6 years, native of Washington, D.C. Spent most of my career there, lived in Houston twice, but always came back because I enjoy Mortal Kombat.
I love it. And safe travels and everything.
Yeah, the planes actually took off and landed on time. I'm sure I'll pay a price for that later.
I love it. Well, for those listening, Cal is here for our Reflections on Patriotism event that we are hosting tonight. So by the time you're listening to this podcast, the event will have already happened. But you can go to the link in the description to listen to a recording of the event on YouTube or in podcast form. And I'm anticipating a great panel tonight, so you should definitely check that out.
Well, Maddie, I'm like a blind date. The anticipation's better than the actual event, but I appreciate your optimism.
Amazing. Okay, so we're going to start off with our BOQ, which stands for Bowl of Questions, which is sitting right in front of you. So pull one of those out, read it, and then tell us your answer.
I'm a desperate female looking for a guy just like you. Where can I find? Oh, no, that's not it. Are there any colors you don't like? Let's see. Well, I'm not too happy about fuchsia.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is it about fuchsia that you
I don't know. It just, it's not very definitive. I like the bold colors, red and black and brown and pink sometimes, depending on who it's on.
Yeah.
So that pretty much covers it. Shall we take another one?
Yeah, do another one.
Okay, let's
do
another one. All right.
It's a hot take.
If you had to open a restaurant, what type of food beverages would it serve? Well, my wife owns a very famous restaurant in Key Largo, Florida, called The Fish House, fresh seafood. And I don't have to open one because I can freeload off of her. And it's the best key lime pie you'll ever eat anyway.
Anywhere.
They sell 350 a week.
Lime pie. Yeah. Yum. That sounds amazing. All right. Last question.
Last question. If you had a Chex Mix named after you, what ingredients would it have in it? This is better than some of the questions they get on The Five on Fox. I like Wheaties. I like Raisin Bran. And, anything with lots of fiber in it at my age is said to be a good thing.
Yeah. Okay. So those were the things that would be in the Cal Thomas Chex Mix.
That would it. Now, you know, I'm old enough to remember when they used to have a little prize in those boxes, those cereal boxes, you know?
Yeah.
So those days are gone forever.
I remember that from my childhood as well. So those were fun times. All right, so we're going to get into the interview portion. I always love to just hear, you kind of told us already where you grew up, but like just hearing about your background, your childhood, where did you grow up? What were you interested in growing up, and how did that kind of lead to, your college years and stuff?
This is
like going to
take about 2 hours, Maddie. Well, I was born in Washington, D.C. My mother was there at the time, so I didn't have a choice. And grew up in the suburbs of Northern Virginia and Maryland, went to high school there with the girl who has now been my wife for the past 6 years. Took me 50 years to win her over, but I never gave up. And started in radio when I was 16 as a disc jockey, playing rock and roll music of the 50s.
Awesome.
And joined NBC News in Washington as a copy boy when I was 18 years old, and was surrounded by the best journalists of that era, where I learned a great deal, and I decided I wanted to stay in journalism, particularly the broadcast variety. Changed a lot since then, sadly. Worked twice in Houston for the NBC affiliate down there, covering the space program and the heart transplant era. Got to know a lot of the astronauts. And then my column started in 1984. It's 40 years old this year. Written over 4,000 columns, and my latest book, A Watchman in the Night, looks at those last 40 years and what I've seen along the way. So that's the short version.
Yeah, I love that. So you have had an amazing career. Can you pinpoint one maybe column or interview that you did that feels like the most maybe significant?
The last one.
Okay.
The thing about columnists, and George Will would tell you the same thing, as soon as you're finished with one, you're looking for the next one. Mm-hmm. And you don't remember what you wrote last week unless it was some major event of some sort.
Yeah.
I like the interview. I've done a lot of interviews over the years with presidents, prime ministers, Benjamin Netanyahu became a friend in Israel, previous prime ministers going back to Menachem Begin. So I met a lot of world leaders, and it's really fascinating to meet them and hear their point of view and perspective.
Yeah. I can imagine over a career that, like yours, that you've definitely had people disagree with you.
No.
How do you handle that? And has how you handle criticism changed over the years?
Not so much. They don't write me too much anymore. I used to say if they're writing me, they're not writing ransom notes. I did a book once where I had the sanitized version of some of my hate mail. A couple of my favorites. Volunteer yourself for brain trauma experiments, you sadistic creep. That was one.
Oh,
but
wow.
I think my favorite was when I was doing commentary on NPR, which was a brief period. Some guy wrote in and said, is there some kind of inbreeding program at NPR that produces a guy like Thomas? I love that. That was funny. So I put that in the hate mail stuff. Most people are nice or they don't bother to write. But I find people of another perspective, though, always say something funny. They'll acknowledge that they read me. They might acknowledge that they like the way I write. But then they always throw in this line, of course, I don't agree with you. So I tell this story once walking down the streets of Washington, and this man stops me and says, hey, are you Cal Thomas? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, I watch you all the time on TV. I said, well, thank you. You're the viewer I've been looking for. He said, but of course, I don't agree with anything you say. So I responded, you know, that's a handsome sport coat you're wearing. He said, oh, well, thank you, but you sure are ugly. Oh, I get it. I said, yeah, let the compliment stand. You don't have to justify yourself. It's the strangest thing.
Yeah, that is so funny. So I actually saw, I had seen that you are celebrating 40 years of your column, which is such a milestone. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What is, as you've been reflecting on 40 years of your column, is there anything that that means to you, and are you celebrating in any way?
Well, it happened the day after my wife's birthday, so we went out a couple of nights ago at a ridiculously expensive Miami restaurant on the Miami River and celebrated both. I've been very fortunate. I knew what I wanted to do early in my life, and I kept at it. I don't play golf. I don't do a lot of side things. And I just focus on this, and I love what I do. People say, when are you going to retire? I said, you wish. Why would I retire from something I love to do something I love less or maybe not at all?
Yeah.
So I'm very fortunate. I've given credit to many who helped me along the way. Most notably, Tom Johnson, an LBJ Democrat who really believed in fairness and balance. He was the publisher of the LA Times, who opened the door for me in 1984 and just became a great friend. Unfortunately, we don't have too many people like that in journalism or in politics anymore. You know, if you have a certain label, you're to be destroyed and you're evil and you're ruining the country. And each side says that about the other, and it's very discouraging to see that.
Yeah. So you touched on a part that we talk about at the Hauenstein Center a lot, that the polarization, you know, in journalism, in media, in politics. What do you do personally to kind of try to combat that, try to see other people's perspectives, while also hold to your own convictions and your own beliefs?
Well, it's a great question, Maddie. And Bob Beckel, the late Bob Beckel, and I wrote a column for USA Today called Common Ground. And we wrote a book together on the same title. And we became friends. I think one of the problems that we have now in America, in instant communication, we talk at each other, but we don't listen to each other. So Bob used to say at the end of our little quasi-debates when we go out, find somebody you don't agree with of the other party. Sit down, have a cup of coffee with them. Listen to them for a change. Don't just throw everything that you believe at them. And build a relationship. You know, Bob and I came to love each other. He was my dearest, dearest friend, and I'm very sad. I still miss him when he passed away. But it became a very, very popular column in USA Today, and people would say, and we took it on the lecture circuit too, people would say, why can't we have this kind of thing in Washington?
Yeah.
Because we're not running for office. And the way it is today, you have to demonize and denigrate your opponent in order to raise money, in order to buy those ads, and in order to win elections. It's very, very discouraging. I mean, you may remember Reagan and Tip O'Neill used to fight like cats and dogs during the day. Then O'Neill would go over to the White House at night. They'd have a drink or two together, and they'd sort things out. We don't have that anymore. In Washington, you can't be seen eating dinner with somebody from another party or persuasion, or somebody will take a picture on the iPhone and use it against you in the next election. I think Joe Lieberman, who just recently passed away, was one of the last examples, he and John McCain, of civility and kindness and working together in Washington. It's very sad to see, and our tax dollars are paying for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that topic. We talk about that a lot here with our Common Ground Initiative and stuff like that. So I'm curious what you would tell young journalists, you know, I mean, I'm early in my career in communications, anybody who's young and, you know, trying to break into the world of journalism and media, what advice would you give them to try to change the landscape?
Try to find people who are actually solving problems instead of talking about them.
Okay.
We are not the first generation to walk the earth. We don't have to invent the wheel. We don't have to discover the use of fire. There are people who have gone before who have figured these things out, economically, socially, foreign policy. I wrote another book some years ago called What Works? Common Sense Solutions to America's Problems. We know what works instinctively, but the people in Washington too often don't want to solve a problem because then they lose the issue. Just take Social Security and Medicare, for example, the biggest drivers of debt. There are many great proposals for solving this. Social Security is going to go broke in 8 years. The CBO says that. They'll run out of money. Everybody knows that, Republicans and Democrats, but they won't do anything about it because they're afraid of being demagogued by their opponents. So when we reach that point, they're either going to have to raise taxes or reduce benefits. Now, I saw a great proposal the other day, and this has been made by the former Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, as well. We are living far longer than we ever lived before. When Social Security was passed in the Franklin Roosevelt administration, people expected to retire at 65 and they'd be dead by 70. Now people are living into their 90s and even 100s. You can't sustain that kind of thing. So for everybody who's on Social Security, you keep it. But for younger people, you encourage them to invest the money that would go into Social Security into balanced mutual funds or some other very relatively safe venue, and then pay for their own retirement with their own money when it's time for them to retire 30, 40, or 50 years from now. That's a very easy solution, and I'm not an economist, but they don't want to do it in Washington because they'd rather have the issue every election.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's great advice to people, you know, listening to each other and trying to solve problems. Yeah.
Well, interview people who are. You know, you look at cable TV especially. The same people are on saying the same thing almost every day, and nothing gets fixed and nothing gets solved. There are a lot of people in this country who are doing some really great things at the state and local level, Republicans and Democrats. Go find them. Go interview them. Find and shame the big shots in Washington and New York that they're not doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, the one question not asked in all of these anti-Israel demonstrations we're seeing on college campuses and in the streets around the country right now. Who are you? Where did you come from? Who made your signs? They're all beautifully printed. You know, do you have a job? Did you get time off from work? Are you on welfare? How are you able to show up in all these places when everybody else has to go to work? No reporter is asking those questions. That's a dereliction of duty if you're a journalist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate those perspectives. That's really cool. And you obviously have a great career and good perspective, so I'll definitely take those into consideration. I wanted to switch gears a little bit to kind of the logistical side of being a journalist. First, but I don't want to make an assumption, get writer's block. And if you do, how do you deal with that?
Never had it. It's the only gift I have,
wow,
speaking and writing after 4,000 columns. You know, it's a gift. I can't explain it. You know, I asked a friend of mine who's passed away now, a very famous comedian, actually he was the starter of The Tonight Show, Steve Allen. Mm-hmm. He had many gifts. He wrote over 3,000 songs. He could play the piano. He wrote mystery books. He did a lot of stuff. And I said, Steve, does anybody ever ask you how you do all of this? He said, no, not really. They're just gifts. I said, well, I think you went through the gift line more than once. But this is about the only one I have, writing and speaking. And so, I've never had writer's block.
I love that. So when you are sitting down to write a column, what is your best environment? Are you at your house? Are you in an office? Do you need headphones? Or do you like a busy space? Like, what is your best environment for writing?
Well, home, I guess, because there are the fewest distractions. But I've written on airplanes at 37,000 feet. I've written on foreign countries, in various places, even in restaurants or coffee shops, just about anywhere. You know, when I started out in 1984, this is going to sound ancient, but I had a little radio shack. We didn't even call them a laptop then. It was just a flat device with a screen that only held about, I think, four or five lines. Mm-hmm. And then when you were finished writing, you had to put these cups on a telephone and hit a certain program that would send it through the telephone to the my syndicate. And then we graduated from the floppy disks. I don't know why they call them floppy, because the IBM ones were solid. You had one for the word processor, and you had another one for the phone system to send the column. Well, now, of course, it's for audio. It's MP3 files and all kinds of other stuff. So much easier. But that's how it was just 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's crazy. And it's come a long way.
Yeah.
So what do you write on now? Do you have your laptop, or do you still do... You write pen and paper, or
what? No. I have a travel with my laptop. Yeah, yeah. I have a major desktop at home, a Mac.
Yeah.
And then I have, of course, an iPhone in emergencies. And other things. Yeah.
I love that. Awesome. My last question for you is: do you think you're going to be a writer forever?
Well, nobody lives forever, but I can't think of anything I'd rather do. My initial flirtation was with show business. I love Broadway musicals, committed many of them to memory, had the pleasure and privilege of meeting many, many great stars and writers, musicians, and others in the business, and who became friends, some of them. And I'd mention their names, so you probably haven't heard of any of them. Then I figured that the news had become show business, so in fact, I've arrived.
That's awesome. So Broadway musical, do you have a favorite?
Well, the most perfect musical was My Fair Lady, of course, okay. But I think the one, and Carousel was another great one, but I think the one that has some lyrics that mean the most to me was one called Carnival that starred Anna Maria Alberghetti, and I always forget his name. He played in the crime series on NBC for years. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway, but some of those writers were poets. I mean, this is what lyrics are. Mm-hmm. And the guy who wrote Annie also wrote Funny Girl for Barbara Streisand. Mm-hmm. And and Marvin Hamlisch, who became a tremendous friend, won the Pulitzer Prize for a chorus line. Mm-hmm. He was Barbara Streisand's rehearsal pianist as a very young man.
That's so cool.
So they have a lot of stories to tell, which I just eat up, of course.
Yeah, I love that. That's so cool. I recently have gotten into musicals. I just actually saw Aladdin.
Jerry Orbach, that's who I was trying to think of.
Good. I'm glad you remembered.
He started out in the Fantastics off-Broadway, the longest off-Broadway running show in history.
Wow.
And I'll give you a lyric. I'd like to live in a clear blue stream where the water is icy cold and go to town in a golden gown and have my fortune told. Just once before I'm old, I'd like to be not evil, but a little worldly wise, to be the kind of girl designed to be kissed upon the eyes. Now, that's just beautiful writing, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it. And that one, what is that one?
Fantastics.
From? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to.
Or When the Moon Was Young, When the Month Was May, When the Stage Was Hung for My Holiday, I saw shining lights, but I never knew they were you, they were you, they were you.
Beautiful.
This is why women love me. See?
Yeah. I love it. All right. So my next question for you is, so this year, our program year, mm-hmm. we have had a theme through all of our events called Empowered Citizenship. And just thinking about how we can empower others, you know, to be better citizens of our country, our world, our communities, make it a better place. I'm interested to hear from you. How do you think the idea of empowered citizenship applies to the work you do in your career, or just how you live your life personally?
Well, that's almost a sermon length answer I could give. I think we have to realize, you know, the Constitution, the preamble begins, "We the people," not "you the government." I remember something Barbara Bush, the late First Lady, said once, that if men and women, if you have children, they must come first. Our success as a nation, your success as a family, depends less on what happens in the White House and more on what happens in your house. So I say you begin by putting your children, if you have children, into schools, an education system that will teach them the real history of the United States, that won't focus on all of these distractions that have nothing to do with making a living. I mean, we are way down the list in math and science and these other major disciplines that were taken for granted when I went to school at that age. And China is up there at the top, and they're sending their students over here to learn stuff at our universities, Harvard, MIT, Yale, some of the other major ones. And then they're going back with their technology learnings, many of them, and they're helping the Chinese Communist government. Meanwhile, we're studying critical race theory, transgenderism, pronouns, and all kinds of other stuff that's just not going to help you get a decent education. So I think we need to switch our priorities, and that begins with the education system. We do not send our troops to foreign countries to be trained. We train them here. But too many parents and grandparents send their kids into what I call these re-education camps to learn things that will not help them get a job or improve the country. So it starts in your own house, not in Washington. That'll be the last place to get it.
Thank you for sharing. I have two more questions for you. Second to last one is, tell us a little bit about your life outside of your career. What do you do for fun? What are some of your hobbies? How do you spend your weekends? What's a perfect Saturday? I don't know, things like that.
Well, I don't have any hobbies. I just love what I do. I love writing, and I love speaking for people who will have me. I had the great blessing of when my wife of 51 years passed away and my current wife's husband passed away at about the same time, we reconnected. We went to high school together. She was the prettiest girl in school. People asked me, did you date in high school? I said, no, I was too fearful of rejection. But we reconnected. It's not a long story, but it's got a lot of details in it, which I won't bore you with. And I moved to Miami 6 years ago, and I'm just enjoying this time of my life. I've been blessed with good health. I've been blessed with a lot of other things, and so I'm very grateful to God and to my sweet wife for making my life happier every day.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing. My last question for you is how I always end all these episodes, which is, I've already asked you this a little bit, but I always like to ask people, what advice would you give for someone wanting to go into a similar career as you? So I know I kind of asked you that at the beginning, but do you have anything else for our younger listeners who want to have a distinguished journalism career as yours?
Well, it's things have changed so much, as I said at the beginning of this interview, not just technologically, which is obvious, but there are so many people in the business now who see themselves as advocates. There are not real journalists in a lot of these places, whether it's Fox, CNN, or even the broadcast networks. Many of them either themselves or they have spouses or girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever who were political activists, mostly in the Democrat Party, a few in the Republican Party. And it's one of the reasons I think that trust in the media generally is at an all-time low. If you look at the Gallup polls and some of the others, people don't trust them. Newspaper subscriptions are down. I mean, I had, at the height of my career, I had over 500 newspapers carrying my column in America. Now it's about half of that because they're cutting content and charging more, which makes no sense at all. Younger people just aren't reading the newspapers. They're on TikTok, they're on other things, but that's not a good place to get information. So I would say, you know, just examine the landscape and see where you can fit in. Probably newspapers is not a good place to start since they're, as far as I know, not hiring, but small town newspapers are. And that's the way to get into the door. You learn from other people who are experienced in the business. I remember when I started, a already established columnist says, just read good writers and don't copy them, be yourself, but see how they construct sentences. My 11th grade English teacher would be shocked that I turned out to be a writer. You know, and then speak in language that people generally understand. I try to avoid big words and write in a conversational style that most people speak. Mm-hmm. And I think that gets you more attention when you do that, mm-hmm. rather than loading up a column with a bunch of fancy words that people don't have time to look up.
Yeah, I agree. I think I love reading, like, writing that's kind of more of a conversation style.
And then persistence. That's the key. I've been fired. I've been denied for all kinds of reasons, but I never give up. And the one who persists and keeps at it is going to succeed.
Yeah, I love that.
There's a great Calvin Coolidge quote about persistence. Look it up. It's really good. Nothing succeeds like persistence. Mm-hmm. Education won't. The world is full of educated derelicts. Talent won't, because there are plenty of talented people. Only the idea of press on makes one a success. I mean, examine your abilities. I mean, I knew, as a basketball player in high school, I knew I wasn't going to the NBA, so I went to NBC. You have to honestly assess your gifts. You know, I could not be a portrait painter, even though I might like to be.
Yeah.
So you just frustrate yourself in that. But if you sincerely believe that you have a gift for something, along with a desire to do it, get the education, the training, the experience you need, and you can go far.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much for all of this. This has been a wonderful interview, and I'm excited to hear your perspectives on our panel tonight. And I'm excited to just have you here in Grand Rapids with
us. Well, thank you, Maddie. I'm excited to hear about my perspectives, too.
Awesome. Well, for those of you listening, again, the link to the event tonight, Reflections on Patriotism, will be in the description of this episode, as well as the off-the-stage episodes of Cal's fellow panelists, Elizabeth Cobbs and Stephen B. Smith. So, once again, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to Off the Stage Podcast, a series produced by the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. The Hauenstein Center, inspired by Ralph Hauenstein's life of leadership and service, is dedicated to raising a community of ethical, effective leaders for the 21st century. For more information on our center, our Cook Leadership Academy, or our Common Ground Initiative, visit our website at www.gvsu.edu/hc. To keep up with our current events and reoccurring initiatives, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn, all of which can be found linked below. If you liked this episode, consider giving us a review or rating so we can be found by other podcast listeners. Again, thanks for listening to Off the Stage Podcast.